What does courage look like, feel like for you? How do we muster our courage to begin potentially challenging conversations that may go quickly awry? How do we stay engaged with people who say things that we find hurtful or offensive? How do we interrupt bullying or abuse in the grocery store, in our schools and workplaces, in our homes, in the government, in our nation? And how do we know what is right? How do we know what is right? The answers might differ for many of us in the room, but we would likely find some commonalities. There are folks, though, whose sense of right and wrong is very different. What does it feel like in your body, in your mind, when you do something that you know just really isn't right? Are you excited, like you got away with something? Are you embarrassed? Are you embarrassed only if you get caught? Do you feel shame? Do you replay it over and over in your mind, saying, "Why the heck did I do that?" Now, what does it feel like in your body and in your mind when you do something that feels like the right thing to do, particularly when it takes some courage? Courage, as we heard from Suzanne, comes in different forms for each of us. Does your heart rate increase? Does your belly tighten? Do you try to talk yourself out of doing it until you realize that that isn't going to work and you might as well just do what's right because you know you're just going to keep thinking about it if you don't? The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said in our reading this morning that the time is always ripe to do what is right, and later to a group of Oberlin students and staff that the time is always right to do what is right. In the past 7 weeks or so, we as a nation have been faced with some deeply troubling news. Though the people's vote elected one candidate by over 2 million votes, the Electoral College chose a different candidate. That candidate was formally approved by the Electoral College in December, and we are bearing witness to a strange and often terrifying reality unfolding as it gets confirmed in January officially, and we wonder, is what is happening right? If one is to watch the news, whether it be Fox or MSNBC, CNN, NPR, the BBC, or Al Jazeera, bizarre things are happening all over the world. The other day, the president-elect accused CNN as being fake news, and then Fox News defended CNN for their journalistic integrity. That, my comrades, is enough to make us wonder if the sky is indeed falling. And that life that we know it has become perhaps a bit more like the end of the rabbit hole in Alice in Wonderland. Or maybe life has simply become an M.C. Escher drawing and disorientation is actually the way it is. In the past few weeks, I have read quotes and essays and sermons from Dr. King. I've also read quotes that have been incorrectly attributed to Dr. King. Carefully do your research. And I've wondered deeply about all the stories that we don't know about those who find themselves in the position of leadership, of those who find themselves in the position of resisting change. I did some digging behind the letter from the Birmingham jail because I wanted to know more about the white male clergy to whom King was responding. While it makes for very interesting reading, I found myself wondering how much our stories change depending on the characters present or who's listening, who we're telling the story to. How much our stories change over time as we gain more insight, maybe making ourselves or others look a little better than maybe they were in that moment with our current understanding. Lynn and I are aware of stories not shared with everyone in the congregation. We bear witness and we hold with you some of the harder parts of your stories as you navigate losses and change. And we know that each person who experiences something has a different story to tell. It's not uncommon for a police officer to arrive at the scene of a car accident and hear drastically different versions of what happened by those who witnessed it. the mill owners in Lawrence, Massachusetts would have a very different story to tell than the immigrants or the women or the children who were choosing to strike. Last week, which seems impossible that it was only a week ago, we gathered to put away our holy and holiday decorations away. And we gathered after the second service, many of us, about 30 of us, gathered to have a deeper conversation. I asked some questions about what we value living in this country. Then I asked folks to consider a deeper question that I pray we do not actually need to answer, but consistently have a sense of strong foreboding that we will need to get very clear on what our answers are. What is so precious to you that you would place yourself in harm's way to protect it? And perhaps the deepest question, who is so precious to you that you would place yourself in harm's way to protect them, that you would give your life for? Just after the election, I read an article in a Dutch news outlet, The Correspondent, by Sarah Kendzior, who has studied authoritarian states for over a decade. Her words both chill me to the bone and inspire me to resist against all that would harm life. She writes, "My fellow Americans, I have a favor to ask you. Today is November 18th, 2016, and I want you to write about who you are, what you have experienced, and what you have endured. Write down what you value, what standards you hold for yourself and others. Write about your dreams for the future and your hopes for your children. Write about the struggles of your ancestors and how the hardship they overcame shaped the person you are today. Write your biography. Write down your memories, because if you do not do it now, you may forget. Write a list of the things you would never do, because it is possible that in the next year, you will do them. Write a list of the things you would never believe, because it is possible that in the next year you will either believe them or be forced to say you believe them." She continues, "Authoritarianism is not merely a matter of state control. It is something that eats away at who you are. It makes you afraid, and fear can make you cruel. It compels you to conform and to comply and accept things that you would never accept, to do things you never thought you would do. You do it because everyone else is doing it, because the institutions you trust are doing it and telling you to do it, because you are afraid of what will happen if you do not do it, and because the voice in your head crying out that something is wrong grows fainter and fainter until it dies." She says, "My heart breaks for the United States. It breaks for those who think they are my enemies as much as it does for my friends. You still have your freedom, so use it. There are many groups organizing for both resistance and subsistence, but we are heading into dark times, and you need to be your own light. Do not accept brutality and cruelty as normal, even if it is sanctioned. Protect the vulnerable. Encourage the afraid. If you are brave, rise up for others. If you cannot be brave, and it is often hard to be brave, be kind. But most of all, never lose sight of who you are and what you value. If you find yourself doing something that feels questionable or wrong a few months or years from now, find that essay you wrote on who you are and read it. Ask if that version of yourself would have done the same thing. And if the answer is no, don't do it." We are a religious people. As Unitarian Universalists, we are encouraged to spiritual growth because we know it is a lifelong journey, a lifelong sojourn, as Suzanne said in the welcome. Every day we are faced with injustice, ignorance, fear, hatred, bitterness. Every day we are blessed with beauty, joy, care, connection, and love. We are faced with choices every day about who to be, what to do, and how to live. Dumbledore, the wise wizard in the Harry Potter series, reminds us that it is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are far more than our abilities. When you are faced with the opportunity to do right, will you choose it? Will we choose it? Dr. King wrote from that Birmingham jail in 1963, "We will have to repent in this generation not merely for the hateful words and actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence of the good people. Human progress never rolls in on wheels of inevitability." In the past, these words have haunted me because sometimes I have done nothing when something wrong was happening. And the phrase, "the appalling silence of the good people," echoes in my ears. It can be difficult to witness something and not know what to do about it, or to do nothing about it. But in general, it's far more difficult to be in the circumstances of what is happening. The interdependent web of which we are a small part is weakened when we do nothing. And acts of solidarity build on one another, making the choice the first time to do something that is right in the face of something wrong can give us momentum to do it again and again. In the late 90s, I was living in San Diego. There are several military bases there. My partner at the time and I were walking through Hillcrest, which is a primarily gay and lesbian area of the city, on a sunny afternoon. Just walking and talking and holding hands, minding our own business, and a car filled with young men with a particularly identifiable haircut yelled some not-so-nice things out of their car at us as they drove past. Now, this was not the first time that this had happened. No, the last. And I don't know what possessed me on this particular day, but I turned around and started walking rather intensely toward them and the car, which had stopped at the red light about half a block away. I was yelling things at them about how easy it is to yell out the window and keep driving, and aren't they so cool? I was so sick of white young men thinking they could do whatever they wanted, thinking they could judge me, judge my life, say mean things. This wasn't the first time I had yelled back at a car full of military guys, but it was the first time that I felt so much anger that I was willing to risk my safety in a way that was perhaps foolish. What the heck did I think I was going to do when those four guys get out of the car? But I also knew I could not be silent. Silence equals death. The rallying cry for the advocacy group ACT UP was everywhere in my community. Silence equals death. I remember the images of fire hoses and dogs set upon African Americans in the South. I remember the story of UU minister, the Reverend James Reeb, who was killed when he answered King's call for clergy to come to Selma. I remember Cesar Chavez and his organizing migrant workers to be treated with dignity. And I remember Matthew Shepard, beaten and tied to a fence in Wyoming, left to die. And the more stories I learn, the more often I now choose to do something, to muster up my courage centered in my heart and risk being uncomfortable, risk speaking up, risk interrupting or offering a way out, or inviting different choices to be made, or asking questions to remind us of who we really are. The Standing Rock Sioux, the Oshete Chacawin, the water protectors are clear that they are willing to put their bodies in harm's way for care of this earth. They are reminding all of us who we really are: peaceful, prayerful, and nonviolent. King said we must use time creatively in the knowledge that the time is always ripe to do right. Now is the time to make real the promise of democracy and transform our pending national elegy into a creative psalm of humanhood. Now is the time to lift our national policy from the quicksand of racial injustice to the solid rock of human dignity. Now is the time to do what is right. What will you choose to do? Will you make art and music that inspires? Will you grow beautiful gardens? Will you teach your kids and grandkids or kids in the neighborhood how to treat one another with kindness and how to stick up for people who are getting bullied? Will you meditate or pray for peace? Will you drive folks to marches or march yourself? Will you come to church and grow your spirit and strengthen the community? Will you write a letter to the editor every time you see something that is full of lies or professes ideas that are harmful to your sense of what is right? You might be pretty busy if you read the Auburn Journal. Will you consider writing your memories, your values, so that you do not forget them?